Welcome, Ruby Slippered listeners, to the 150th episode of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where even the half-century mark is cause for a centennial celebration. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Cam.
And this week, I get to regale my co-hosts and our audience with tales of my recent trip to the Emerald City Comic Con here in my home away from home, Seattle, Washington. But before we get to that, we'll start things off in, I guess we'll say, Emerald City style this week with our weekly geekly, geekly weekly update. Cam, why don't you go first, man? What you been up to?
Oh, man, not a whole lot. Was just hanging out at the Adventure Game Store a lot this week, playing a lot of tabletop games. Got in some new games that I'm excited to try out. I got one all the way from Germany. It was a Kickstarter that I wish that I would have gotten in on when I had the chance, but unfortunately I did not. And so I ended up having to go onto BoardGameGeek and find it and buy it from someone in Germany, because apparently you can't find a copy anywhere here in the States. It's called 27th Passenger, A Hunt on Rails. And I ordered that, and that actually came this weekend, and I'm pretty excited to play that at our next game night. Also been doing a ton of trading on BoardGameGeek. It's just sort of been like, it's in spurts. Like, I'll, you know, make like 10 trades and then I won't be on the site for another, like, you know, month. But I traded a couple of my old games that I don't play for some new games that I've been wanting to play. And I got my hands on a copy of Pillars of the Earth, which is based on a very popular and amazing book by Ken Follett. And so I traded it. I've sent my copy out that I traded for, and I'm waiting to get my copy back, but I have a tracking number, so I'm hoping it'll come in the next day or so. I'm anxious to get my hands on that as well. Can't remember whether or not I mentioned in my last update, my weeks are melding together, but I went and saw Insurgent, the second in the Divergent series books. It's pretty good. And that's about it. Just did some Xbox 360 gaming, and still on the hunt for a Xbox One game that I can actually stomach. That's about that's about it for me.
All right. Sounds like you know what? I was about to make the same convergent joke I think I made last week. So we may have trod
yeah,
this ground
I can't
before.
Remember.
All right, Brian, over to you, man.
I have fairly exciting news. The 22nd anniversary of Tate's comics, games, anime, paintings, Pocky, and more was this last week. So that was fun. I feel like I missed an opportunity. I didn't really buy anything. I got there kind of late in the day, and everything had been like picked to hell. So there wasn't anything really for me. I didn't cash in on the cool sales or anything. But I did do the screen printing that they offer at all of their events now. So I got two cool commemorative t-shirts for Tate's 22nd.
Nice.
So Tate's, for people not fortunate enough to live in the South Florida region, is the biggest comic sensation in the sensational comics business in our area. I think that's fair to say, right, guys?
Absolutely.
And I mean, I did it last week, but it's not really going to pay off until International Tabletop Day. As I mentioned once or twice before, I am the local rep for Japanime Games, and their big promo for Tabletop Day is blind box figures for the game. So it looks like we will be getting, we being Adventure Game Store and I, will be getting an entire case of blind box figures to give away to participants for absolutely free.
Awesome.
Ooh. That's a pretty good deal. They're probably going to be like 15, 20 bucks each.
That's huge.
Look for me to be showing up in various mustache disguises and hats.
So that is, what is it, April 11th, like 2 to 8-ish?
Nice. That's for the Crossmaster crowd, to which I belong.
Drop by Adventure Game Store that day, play a game, get a figure.
Nice. I will. Don't spread the word, though, because I want all the figures.
We'll just edit that out. And that was kind of it.
Awesome. Sounds like a complete week. Looking forward to repping some Japan MA and Crossmaster pretty soon at the Adventure Game Store, our headquarters in Davie, Florida. And I think it's time for my update. So I will start by saying that I am also playing some Xbox 360 for want of a current gen console out here in Seattle. I only have my 360 out here, so I decided to play Dragon's Dogma, pick that game up again. It's a game I've always meant to play, and just, you know, I play and I stop and I play and I stop, so I started all over again. And man, I'm really enjoying that game. I like it a lot. And I recruited one of Brian's pawns, which are one of the sort of NPCs you can create and loan out. And she is now part of my party, and we're going to have adventures together. So Dragon's Dogma, I think 2013's hit. Finally getting played.
I think it's an interesting side note. Tom messaged me on Xbox Live about that pawn, and I had no idea because it's been a while since I played the game, but apparently she's been leveling without me.
At what level did you leave her? Because she was like 12 or something, I think, when I encountered her.
Like 2 or 3. I mean, I didn't actually play that game very long. I liked it, but I couldn't get into it, you know?
I guess as they're taking on adventures, they level. That's cool. I will say I'm a little bit shameless because I wanted my pawn to get used and gain experience and so on. I made her a sprightly, cute girl. So far, I have yet to be disappointed. Every time I pop back into the game, she has been used by another adventurer, which sounds awful now that I think about it.
She has gone on adventures without you. That's
there you go. There you go. But I'm enjoying the game. So Dragon's Dogma, if you haven't played it, give it a try. You have a character, and then you basically get to create your own companion. Think of it as you being the doctor and creating your own custom companion. And apart from that, let's see, I've been, attending the Emerald City Comic Con out here in Seattle. And that's going to be a perfect transition into tonight's topic. Once we have dispensed with reporting on news, we're going to have a news extravaganza segment as usual. And Cam, why don't you go first, man? I know you've got some exciting news for us.
I do. Let's bash and praise the Chinese first. Praise goes to them because they are planning to build a massive solar power station in space.
Ooh.
Apparently, if they get it done, it's going to be the largest structure ever, man-made structure ever put into space by us. 6 square kilometers of solar panels, essentially. What they would be able to do is collect just an enormous amount of energy from the sun and beam it back down to Earth via either microwaves or lasers, which would be a pretty good solution to fossil fuels and all the other coal and stuff, you know, all the other stuff that we use that's choking the planet. So kudos to China for that forward thinking. But then they sort of ruined it when one of their phone companies directly compared Apple to Hitler, posting a funny little anime picture online with a picture of Hitler doing the Hitler salute with a little red patch on his arm, wherein there is, instead of a swastika, the Apple logo. So I think that was pretty insensitive for them to do, but I guess they don't have the cultural sensitivity that we here at the Nerd Extravaganza have for all races, creeds, colors, religions, etc.
Except midgets.
Yeah. Except for midgets, yeah. Sony is actually going to, looks like they're going to come, hopefully this will happen, but there's rumblings that they are going to make a live action Robotech movie.
Ah,
yes. Which would be pretty awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to that, hoping it will happen. And then a mashup of two of my favorite things, Game of Thrones and Doctor Who. My favorite character, second only to Tyrion, Arya Stark, the actress who plays her on the Game of Thrones HBO show, is apparently going to be on an upcoming Doctor Who episode. So Maisie Williams is her name, and she'll be joining Doctor Who, and I'm very much looking forward to that because she is a fine young actress. And last but not least, we'll end on like kind of a funny note. It's geek related because this guy used tech to do it. An inmate in a London prison apparently tricked his jailers into letting him out of jail by setting up a fake website and a fake email account that was very similar to the actual, you know, Bureau of Prisons website and email address, and basically just emailed them and said, yeah, this guy should be out on bail. His bail, you know, it was like, you know, made up an official looking document, like it was coming from the courts. People at the jail got it and said, okay, yeah, we got to release this guy, and they let him out. And, you know, it took them a while to figure it out, but then they finally, they finally did track him down, and they put him from this one facility that he was in, which wasn't very, I don't think it was that, you know, I don't think it was that tough of a prison, because obviously he had internet access, and now he's in a supermax prison with no email and no internet access. So good try, buddy, but he's back in the clink.
Man, I'm not sure how I feel about that. It seems like he should get a reward for that.
It's fun. Well, I mean, he was in jail for fraud already. he'd bilked these companies in London or in England for like millions of dollars. And so he was in jail for fraud and forgery and all that stuff already. You'd think they would have taken some precautions with someone of his criminal mastermindedness, but they didn't, and they got burned, but they eventually caught up to him. The long arm of the law, as it were.
Wow. Does that conclude your news, or got more?
That, yeah, no, that's it for me.
So don't enter what I assume will be a pretty large exclusion zone when there's a big microwave cannon fired back at Earth.
Yes.
If you are a company who does a lot of business in China, maybe treat the workers in those factories well, or you will be depicted as Hitler-esque. And if you get sent to a cushy prison, maybe don't commit internet fraud and then get sent to Oz.
Yeah, don't rock the boat.
Awesome. How about you, Brian?
Well, we keep bringing up Mars One, and I'm kind of sorry to report, but it looks like the whole thing was just a giant scam.
Aww. No.
Like, they have apparently lost the interest with the reality television show. The truth is they're closer to launching in 100 years than 10.
Oh, man.
And a bunch of the people that were, you know, interviewed for the final, whatever it was, 10 or whatever, have kind of come out like, yeah, they're asking me for money and telling me to schedule photo ops for money to send to them. And yeah, it's all a big, very sketchy, even sketchier than one would have imagined by Magic Trip to Mars.
That sucks. Ah. That
really stinks.
I don't know. I like the idea of funding needed things with optional things. In other words, having a portion of our entertainment dollars go into doing good.
I do like, you know, some people are saying scam, but I do like how honest they were about it, because from the very beginning, it was, we want 10 people to die on Mars.
Yeah, you'll never make it back.
So I don't really know if they were scamming anything or not. They were being pretty honest about this will end terribly.
God, I was looking so forward to the, like, basically the real world, called the real red world, filmed on Mars. That would be the obvious next thing. Like,
oh man, the real red world.
I'll tell you what, if Margot takes my water one more time, we're gonna have a problem.
I'm gonna blow her out of the airlock.
If Puck rides his skateboard through our crops one more time, thereby endangering the mission,
he's done. Oh god.
Well, that's a bummer, Brian.
But to make up for that, Boeing has applied for a patent on actual shield technology. They have worked out a way of using counter sound waves to brace for shock waves.
Hmm.
So they can't exactly prevent the missile from striking yet, but if it strikes nearby, they can mitigate the damage pretty heavily.
Hmm.
Oh, so they cancel out the, what's the word, the kinetic damage of the explosion, I guess, or something?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty interesting.
That's a huge step towards, like, honest-to-God force field. I kind of like that.
That makes me want to, like, join the military again, so that if the base I'm at gets struck, I can do, like, the Star Trek fall back and forth.
The rumble. The fake
right,
rumble.
Right, right. Instead of actually being hurt. That's interesting. Cool. Always wanted a force field of my very own. And I don't want to force any more news out of you with that in mind. Is that pretty much it, man?
That's what I got.
All right. In that case, let's move on to tonight's topic. which doesn't involve force fields, but of course, force fields are certainly a mainstay of fiction, and especially of that fiction which is found in comics. And I will cease this awkward segue and just say that I was at the Emerald City Comic Con this weekend past. I have been meaning to attend this convention for some time. It's held at the same venue as PAX, which I attend regularly, and it was cool for me to see the space repurposed. And I've got to say, you know, I've been to some comic conventions, mainly the smaller ones down in Florida, in South Florida, and I've been to MegaCon in Orlando, which is in Central Florida, and it's, I wouldn't characterize as small. It's a pretty good-sized convention. But I have to say, this took the cake for me in terms of its scale and the sheer variety. And I sort of discovered something at this convention, which is that there's nothing wrong with spending most of your time there in the artist alley and in the vendor space, because and I'll say especially in the artist alley, which was more like an artist like city state at this massive convention. Because you're directly patronizing people and showing direct support for what they do by handing them your money. And that's a realization I had not come to until now. In fact, I hadn't gone to Comic-Cons, specifically those focusing on comics, in some time. One, because the offerings in South Florida are kind of what they are. And two, because I guess I never really made that connection. And I'm not sure what it is about this convention that brought it out, but I felt good about giving these people my money, and man, I really could have broken the bank easily at this convention. Really, it's rewarding when you buy something from an artist, because it's not like just you're buying a trinket at a store. You appreciate this person's creative output so much that you want it, and then they smile and they're happy because you're supporting them. Like, it's just, it's very rewarding, and that finally clicked with me more than it ever has in the past, and it made me feel not at all bad about spending the lion's share of my time there, you know, among the artists and the other vendors, as opposed to waiting in line to meet celebrities or attending panels. Admittedly, there were some panels I might have liked, but I just got sucked way into this cavernous vendors area, and damn, it was fun. And I also had the advantage of bringing two people with me who had never been to a convention. Maybe that's what opened my eyes, but with that said, I'd like your view on that, guys. I mean, I guess there was a cynical part of me that you viewed conventions as like a ad hoc mall, and I didn't like that for some reason, but I definitely have gone away from that point of view.
I'm glad you finally came around, because Artist Alley has kind of been my favorite part of conventions for a while, especially MegaCon. Because so many people kind of complain about it. Oh, I don't know why you go to MegaCon. It's just a giant vendor's room. Yeah, it's a giant vendor's room with artists you can't meet anywhere else. Like, I have so many comics that were like their very first efforts.
Yeah, it's more like I won't even say a gallery. It's more like a collection of mini galleries featuring pieces you just won't see anywhere else.
I mean, that's really, like, Brian, like you said, my favorite part of the con is going and seeing all that independent stuff that you're not going to find anywhere, you know, even on the internet. You know, it's hard to find. You're meeting these people, you're seeing their craft, you're seeing them actually do it a lot of the times right there in front of you, and you're getting something that's pretty unique and one of a kind. And typically when I go, that's the first place I run to.
Yeah, it'll certainly be for me as well. And you know, Brian, that very criticism about MegaCon as being a giant dealer's room may have maybe sunk in and put me off a little bit, but not anymore. I really have a new appreciation for what these people do. And like, man, I'm just talking like breathtaking stuff. Like I just felt like an idiot. Like my mouth agape, just like, wow, 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 wow. It's just really inspiring to see what people can do.
It's not quite the same, because he's definitely more established, and I think he was actually in like the vendor area instead of the artist alley, but spiritually it was the same thing to me. I have put money in Larry Elmore's hand.
Yes, yes. Cool. And that's an example of an artist who illustrated covers for books that you loved growing up, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's at least half the reason I'm into dragons and painting and playing the hero games and heroic games and everything. Like, his imagery just formed my imagination.
Yeah, and you know, I guess this is the closest you can come to being a patron of the arts without being like a 16th century European aristocrat, right?
One of the things I like too is getting back to actual Artist Alley, is you have no idea who you're going to buy from today, who some kid will feel that way about tomorrow.
Right. This could be the beginning for them, or yeah.
I'm sure Larry would have started out at an Artist Alley if he could have.
Now there's an interesting point. I know conventions in some form or another have been around for a long time, but has the Artist Alley been something that's developed to this level in recent decades, I guess?
I mean, just as someone that's been going to cons for, you know, 15, 20 years, I mean, I think that really is ramped up. And correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, if you guys have had a different experience, but to me, I've really started noticing it over the last like 5 years. 10 years or so ago, you'd find some, you know, hit or miss, you know, people would just get you know, kitschy crafts and things like that. But really over the last like, and especially with the explosion just of media, you know, just the outlet of different media and stuff like that. I mean, I think that's helped a lot. But over the last 5 years, I've really just seen like a critical mass of all these new artists just, I guess, flocking and plugging, you know, a lot of the space at these different conventions.
New and established, I would say, which I think lends a certain amount of credibility to the Artist Alley as a showcase for your work. There were people who... they would have like, yeah, here's my image book, here's my Dark Horse book, here's, you know, the work I'm doing. And they would have that stuff prominently featured. And then they would have their own, I won't say their own, but, you know, their projects that they were working on under their own initiative as well. So, yeah, I think if I were an artist showing my wares, it would give me confidence to be, you know, in the same space as a quote-unquote established artist who sees this as a legitimate and viable place to get their brand out there, as it were.
I had a pretty interesting interaction with one of my like top five artists. Not, I mean, Larry Elmore is like my favorite artist ever. So not quite that caliber, but still like way, way up there. Echo Chernik, she was at MegaCon and I was like, wow, your stuff's pretty cool. And I had no idea she had worked with Disney, that she had done national chains, that she had done, you know, galleries and everything like that. I thought she was like some chick at a Artist Alley. and I kind of like, I mean, she didn't act like big. She didn't, you know, she didn't say, well, actually I designed Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom or anything like that. Like, she was just like, yeah, I'm glad you like it. Cool, man. Check this out. And she like really talked to me on like, you know, such a personal level that I came home from that. And I was like, oh, let me look at these business cards that I got. Oh yeah. Echo. Let me see. And I was like, oh my God, like she's a celebrity. Like,
that's awesome. It's so cool when, like, you know, people like of that stature are so down to earth, you know, like how, you know, our former guest Allison Hayslip was. I mean, that was, you know, it's always great to, it's like those kind of people you want to succeed. You want them to go on and do even greater things. Whereas I know we've all had some pretty weird, pretty negative experiences with certain, quote unquote celebrities in our little local market here.
Right. Yeah. I'll say that too. Like, these people, I don't think I met anybody who was full of himself or full of herself. They were very, like, even when I would like, oh, look at this person. And then I would look and see like, oh my God, that's a property I completely recognize. That's a cover for a book that's well known. Mm-hmm. They were still down to earth, happy to talk to you, happy to shake your hand, happy to shoot the breeze. Some of them had people queued up, so, you know, you didn't want to yak their ear off. But man, yeah, I have to say, down to every artist I met, they were all very friendly. Nobody was pissed to be there. I mean, come the end of the day Sunday, they were like, man, I'm beat. Like, you know, which, having worked at conventions, we all know is a normal condition to be in on the last day. But still, like, very personable, very approachable. And that demeanor, that way of behaving, did a lot towards like reinforcing my decision-making process when it came to throw my money at them, you know, that and the obvious art that they were offering.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that too, is that, I mean, you know, personality goes a long way. I mean, you're more apt to open up your wallet to someone you think is personable and a good person, you know, even if maybe it wasn't something you might not have bought otherwise, just to support them, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The money going into the pockets of a good person feels really good, you know? And so let me ask you guys this, and this might be a question for a question better suited. And this might be a question better suited for an artist, but is there anything wrong with producing art to sell?
No, not at all.
No, I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah, you gotta pay the light bill. I mean, you know.
Well, I ask because I've encountered a few artists, none this weekend and none at most conventions, who view their art as some heaven-sent treasure that is above mere, like, you know, commercialism. So at the same time, they're maybe complaining that they're not making any money. You know, oh, my art is above, you know, display for sale to the masses. You know what I mean? I don't have any problem with that. I think any product of value should be sold shamelessly. You know what I mean?
I think Chris brought this up once. Once upon a time, if you owned a hardcover book, you were a millionaire.
Right, right.
I view it kind of the same way. Once upon a time, if you owned art, you were a millionaire. And, you know, I know there are still, like, artists who feel that they should never, ever have prints, that it should be all original, and they should have one of a kind, and it should be worth $1 billion. But as not a millionaire, I like being able to, you know, $50 for a print instead of several thousand for the original. And quite honestly, usually originals are very large. You don't get as many of them on the wall. Or...
right. Right, right. Exactly.
And I think there's something to be said, too, about, you know, I mean, if the art is that good, or it's that, you know, if it's so, you know, out of this world, then why wouldn't you want to share it with as many people as possible? You just want one person to have it locked up in their den, you know, in their house.
Right, I mean, right. Well, yeah. I guess the exclusivity would appeal to a certain crowd, but, you know, we're just average Joes and Janes going to a convention hoping to buy art from other average Joes and Janes. Well, I won't say average, other talented Joes and Janes. And that sort of brings me to another point. Actually, I had a discussion with one couple who were in their venture together. They had recently left their quote-unquote day jobs. They had taken other work to pay the bills. But they were now doing their art full time, making sales at conventions. They had all these different ways of bringing in revenue with their art. And it was a beautiful thing because not only were they a couple working together to make art together and enjoying what they were making for, like, commercial sale, they were using that money to fund, like, you know, pieces that they wanted to do for just display in galleries. Like, you know, because we make enough money doing this, now we can perform our craft just for the love of it and not necessarily for financial gain.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great position to be in. Instead of being at the mercy of someone who, well, I don't want to say at the mercy, but, you know, there's no need for a patron when you're your own patron. I guess that's what I'm trying to say in short.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you bring up another point, which I think is awesome and really is sort of a good byproduct of this whole Artist Alley craze. I would say just anecdotally, 50, maybe more than 50% of the artists that are in Artist Alley and the Artist Alley when I go to different cons are couples. And I've even seen couples with, like, children there with them. And, like, that's their source of income, and it allows them to do the things that they love and be together while working. You know, I mean, I don't know if they have a 9-to-5 or, you know, what their other situation is, but at least for that weekend, they're there together as a family unit, you know, selling the things that they've created together. And I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. There were a lot of, like, you know, couples together, and as well, their kids were, like, hanging out with them. And, like, they thought it was cool that their parents were selling this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, how stoked did you have been as a kid if you were, like, in an Artist Alley hanging out at a convention with your parents, you know, back in the day? That'd be awesome.
Very, yeah. That's a great point, and I observed that firsthand, too. I'm glad you brought that up, Cam. I really enjoy this convention, and I'm glad we kind of centered discussion on the sort of con as a place for people who want to buy art and make art to meet and facilitate those transactions.
You know, people shout buy local, it doesn't get much more local than meeting the person and talking to them.
Right. Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, the small business is held up as this paragon of American enterprise, and maybe it is. But you can't get much more small business than, as Cam just mentioned, mom and dad or mom and mom, to be politically correct, you know, with the kids. Like the business is right there. This is what we make. This is what we sell. You know, you hand them cash. They hand you the item. You can't get more pure capitalism than that, as far as I can wager.
Yeah, I was there. Where was I? I think it was at the last year at MegaCon. I picked up this really cool print. It was on canvas, and it was a guy and his wife. And what they did was they took old G.I. Joes, and then they put them into these like really cool scenes. So it's like, you know, like it's just really awesome. Like they have them like Storm Shadow, like hiding behind a wall. Like it's really awesome. Like, and what they did was they put them in these really cool scenes, and then they took really close up high res photographs of the figures. And it just really blew me away. I bought like three of them. My brother nice. my brother stole one of them, but like they're awesome. And you know, it's just that creativity that you're not going to find, you know, hardly anywhere else. And it was, I mean, look, I don't know that I'm sure that they probably don't have Mattel or whoever owns G.I. Joe's, you know, permission to, you know, use that, but whatever. I mean, it's art, you know, it's something that they took and created and was really cool and was one of a kind. I've not seen anything like it since. And I wish I would have taken their card. I think I did, but I don't know what I did with it because it was that cool. And it's like, you're only going to find little gems like that, you know, when you hit those little mom and pop sort of places. Everything else is just, like Brian was saying before we started the show, just shit that you can buy on the internet from China for, you know, 50 cents a pop.
Yeah, I limited my spending. Speaking of the products from China for 50 cents a pop, I limited my spending, and I was happy to see that my friend who'd never been to a con limited hers as well to stuff you could only get at the convention. Yeah. You know, she would see things like, you know, I think I could probably just buy that online. And she would buy things that were, you know, produced and something that was unique to the convention, as you just mentioned. And in bringing up that point, you sort of brought up another one in my mind, Cam, which is homage or appropriation or whatever you want to use it of, I guess we'll say, copyrighted material in art. Mm-hmm. My view is that, I mean, if you're doing your own artwork, if you're using toys as a prop, or if you're using them as an inspiration to do a mashup or your own, or your own interpretation of a certain theme, I think that I'm like ethically okay with that, I guess. I know some people are not, and I'm not suggesting that I should take somebody's comic book cover and like put my signature on it and like see. But if somebody wants to paint a character in a setting of their own imagining or mashed up with a character from another property, like I think the value add in that justifies it in my mind. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, I feel the same way. Like if someone was just making a Cobra Commander figure and selling it exactly like the ones that, you know, were made back in the '80s, then yeah, that I don't think that that's right. But if they're taking that Cobra Commander figure and they're doing something like the art thing that I just talked about, or another example, if you're taking someone else's comic book, like you said, and just replicating it and selling it, well, hey, that's, you know, that's shitty. You shouldn't take someone's art like that. But another really cool item I found at a con one time was a print of someone had taken old comic books that they had purchased, I'm assuming, and cut them up and made like a huge collage. So I got this really cool G.I. Joe collage of all these different like comic book covers and pages. I mean, you know, they hacked up the comics, but they probably weren't worth anything anyway. And they turned it into something of value, like a nice piece of art that you can put on the wall that reminds you of your childhood. So I think if you're significantly altering it to put your own style into it, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But if you're just like straight replicating it and saying, okay, here it is, and trying to pass it off as your own, then, you know, I think that's the spirit of, or should be the spirit of the law anyway.
Couldn't agree more. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Well, you guys probably have seen April's artwork. And yes, she does that kind of thing, the collage with like storage boxes and Christmas ornaments and like all kinds of neat little things that, I mean, even if it is a little, you know, possibly legally sketchy, I mean, you can't buy them. Like, where can you go and get a G.I. Joe pencil box in this day and age? Right. You have to like travel back to the 80s or whatever. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea.
I agree, man. And you know, Cam will know better than I, you know, just what the power of the spirit versus the letter of the law is relative to one another. But I think at least in spirit, that should be fine. You're creating something new out of something else.
Right. I don't think anybody intended you to have a pencil box when they sold you a comic book.
Right, right. And I don't think anybody, when they put a G.I. Joe figure out, like, you know, I don't think their corporate lawyers are like, oh, by the way, we reserve all rights to, you know, diorama applications of these figures. Right, Cam? Weigh in on that.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine.
I mean, I've seen some people do it with, like furniture. Kind of like, that's what your brother did with your Doctor Who table, right? It wasn't comics, but he cut up memorabilia, I guess, right? Like posters
No, I think he just went online and just printed out color copies of like just pictures from Google and printed them out and then, you know, made a collage on the tabletop.
And I mean, that table is an amazing piece. And I've seen some other people do that. Like there's a picture, I think it came up on my Facebook, of a Avengers like filing cabinet.
Oh shit.
And I can't think of anything better than this like boring ass stodgy filing cabinet in your office looking like awesome with comic book art on it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's awesome. And I mean it's different obviously because you know he made it and he gave it to me as a gift, so it's not really commercial, but even if it were commercial, I still don't see the problem in that. I mean, you're making something that's, you know, how far does, you know, it's fair use, you know. Once you put something out there, you've got to understand that, you know, people are going to put their own spin on it.
Here's a question I have for you, Cam, then, along these lines. When it's an individual artist or a small family just selling things at a convention, I doubt that draws the attention of the rights holders and those holding the rights to the original properties on which these derived works are based, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how aggressive, you know, some are just like whatever, you know, some of them are really aggressive. I mean, they'll send people to, you know, the bigger conventions or they'll send people to bigger venues and stuff like that and try to figure out who's pirating their stuff. It really comes down to the individual rights holder. But yeah, I mean, you're pretty safe, even if it would be technically against the letter of the law, what you're doing. I mean, no one's going to spend thousands of dollars on a lawsuit to get you to stop selling one or two, you know, prints at a convention here and there. It's just not economically worth it. The only reason they would do that is to try to set a precedent, spend the money to set a precedent that, hey, we're someone that's not to be messed with, so don't pirate our shit, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's a matter of weighing whether it's worth going after them, both for protection of your identity and maybe for any financial gain that could come out of it, right?
Right, exactly.
And then I think a few episodes back, and of course this is in no way official, nobody's asking you to sign your name to this, but I think we kind of spitballed an idea where, like, you know, if you own some rights, maybe you could have some kind of easy to get license for a small timer up to a certain number of units who'd want to appropriate your work for use in theirs in this sort of way. Remember that?
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about how they would have like some sort of like secondary license where it's like, we're not condoning it. We're not like, you know, whatever, but you know, if you're going to put your own art spin on it, that's fine. You can do that, but you pay us X amount of dollars from whatever sales you make.
Yeah. And they could tier that, you know, if you're selling 50,000 units a year, that's going to cost you a little more versus, you know, 10.
Right.
So, you know, we're providing all the avenues for everybody to play nice together here on the Nerd Extravaganza podcast. I don't know what more people
We're problem solvers.
Indeed, we are.
We're deal makers, not deal breakers.
Absolutely. But anyway, guys, thanks for kind of hearing me out and talking about this. My faith in the classic comic convention as a place to view, enjoy, and purchase art has been completely renewed thanks to the Emerald City Comic Con.
Did you see any of the guests?
Man, that's kind of why I hit on this. I was so completely drawn in to the space for the artist that there were guests I would have liked to see. There were panels I would have liked to attend. Nope. Just completely devoted to this the entire time.
Wow. That says a lot then about it.
Honestly, it does. I mean, I like to think of myself as a somewhat seasoned con goer, but just the sheer scale and variety of what was on display, combined with the fact that I was there with two newbies who were joining me and whoa, cool, served to just keep me down there almost the entire time. And I don't feel like I lost anything for that. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, no, just because I was looking through the guest list, and I mean, there were a ton of guests that I probably would have liked to have seen or at least gone to a panel on. Like, they had a bunch of Doctor Who people, a bunch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. people.
Yep.
Looked like, I mean, Stan Lee, obviously. I mean, that's...
There's folks from Walking Dead as well. Yep. Yeah, it was a...
Speaking of Stan Lee.
Ouch. That's
terrible.
Actually, as we went in on Sunday morning, one of my friends was like, oh, we could go see Stan Lee. And I'm like, yeah, we probably should have gotten here at like 6 a.m. for that. And the doors opened at 10. And as we were getting to on the escalator to go up to the main show floor, we overheard somebody being like, oh, we needed to get here at like 6 if we wanted to see Stan Lee. So, you know, I will also admit that I'm not a huge like celebrity person. Like, I'm not really ever sure socially, like how the interaction's supposed to go. Like, mm-hmm. Am I supposed to just look at you now? Or, but I'll say this in favor of the Emerald City Comic Con. They have a great guest roster. They had one this year, and I understand they do every year. So if you're looking to meet some celebrities, that's one more check mark in the win column for Emerald City.
Would you say that it was like the biggest con you've ever been to?
It was the biggest dedicated Comic Con I've been to. At least that's my perception. I don't know what their attendance numbers are versus MegaCon, but right now in my constellation of cons attended, those would be the two biggies. And my perception was that Emerald City was bigger. I might be wrong. You know, it could be that MegaCon is four times as big, and I've just been there so much that it's not as novel to me.
Right.
But it was certainly the most impactful, as I think I've communicated.
And would you say the crowd was younger to youngish, or what was the crowd like?
The crowd was awesome. And I'm really glad you asked that question, because Brian will attest, I'm a little self-conscious just in general as a person. And we've been at anime conventions, we've been at comic conventions years back where I've been like, man, we're too old. I'm getting too old. Right, Brian? I mean, you remember me like whining about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's when I was younger even. Well, let me tell you, at this con, it was all ages. It was everything from, you know, little kids there with their parents and guardians and, you know, maybe older siblings, to teenagers, to young adults, to middle-aged adults, to beyond middle-aged adults. It was a very diverse crowd in terms of age. And I would say it didn't look like a, God, for lack of a less crass term, a sausage party. It seemed like it was a pretty gender balanced crowd as well, and that goes for the vendors as well as the attendees.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like when there's a nice cross section.
Yeah, I definitely felt like I belonged. It wasn't like it was 15,000 like Hetalia cosplayers, to use that now probably dated reference, and then me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the smaller cons that we usually go to down here in South Florida, unfortunately, it's like us and like, you know, 5,000 18-year-olds.
Right, right. Who just aren't old enough to go to South Beach yet, right?
Yeah.
I hate to say it, that for the longest time I resisted this sort of line of reasoning, but there's a cultural difference between South Florida and Seattle in particular, and probably the Pacific Northwest in general, or at least the parts of it that I frequent. And not to say that can't change, not to say I'm giving up on my, you know, home, but I think that is reflected in the demographics that turn up at conventions. And I'll say this too, to sort of drive that point home. As we were leaving the convention, both on Friday and Sunday, the days we attended, we were playing a guessing game as to whether people walking around in the streets had attended the convention or were just dressed that way because that's how they dress every day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. There was a lot of great cosplay, I will say, on display, but also a lot of folks who were just kind of dressed in what has become sort of geek fashion. You know, somebody with a Wonder Woman shirt on or something.
Mm-hmm.
One, this just sticks out. We were sitting down for a bite to eat, and a mother comes in with, like, just a Wonder Woman shirt on and, like, regular street clothes, but had her daughter on her shoulder. And the kid had a little Thor hammer. I don't know how she did it, but it was like, this was like a toddler, but she had this little, like, soft Thor hammer, like, attached to her arm. So when she would flail her arm around, the hammer looked like it was, like, spinning, you know, Mjolnir or whatever it's called. You know how Thor does the spin? It was really cool.
That's awesome.
And another child was walking around. I don't know why these two really cute kids just stuck in my mind. Another child was walking around and had sewn into the pants of her little outfit a horse, so that it was like between her legs. And all she had to do was like grab the reins, and it would be like she was galloping along on a horse as she was walking. Well, by the end of the day, she had tired of that. So she's walking around with like this horse's head like beating against the ground as she walks. And that was That's pretty awesome. Cool. But yeah, you know, as I said, very young attendees all the way to people, you know, probably around my parents' age. And that was awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. You guys got any more questions for me? I'll say this. I have a million cards I took from artists, and I could spend literally 2 hours going down each one and saying something about each and every one. Instead, I think what I'm going to do is commit to providing a list, and we'll link out to that in some form or fashion on the website. And who knows, I think we are hoping for another appearance of the Adventure Game Store's Brian Dalrymple in the near future, so maybe we can have a little cross-pollination between subject matter from my visit to this con and his recent attendance at Gamma.
For sure.
Yeah, just a thought. Anyway, all that rambling aside, did you guys have any more questions, or should we sort of wrap this up?
I'd like to point out, you didn't go on Saturday?
I did not. Yeah, just Friday and Sunday. Yep.
And you perceived Emerald City to be larger?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
It's almost guaranteed to be larger then, because Saturday is always the big day. So if it even looked close on the not huge day, I bet Saturday pushed it way over.
You know something? That's a good point, Brian, because I strategically avoided Saturday. And wow, yeah, if my perception was that it was huge on those days, yeah, the numbers probably are in favor of Emerald City. That's interesting, man. Not in any way to take away from Mega, or to say that I am trying to put Emerald City over MegaCon. Just to sort of answer that question as to whether or not this was the biggest con I've ever been to. It may be. But anyway, unless you guys have anything else, I think we can let the con going public be on its way.
That's it for me.
I think we can.
All right. Well, with the episode coming to a close, I will encourage our listeners to click their heels together 3 times, and in so doing, somehow magically end up subscribing to our podcast on iTunes or whatever other podcatching software they happen to use. And as well, check us out on the streaming service known as Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, where the closer we get to 1,000 likes, the more and more likely a contest to reach that number becomes. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, join our Google Circle, and don't forget to join the Nerd Extravaganza HQ Facebook group.
Then you can follow the yellow brick road down to nerdstravaganza.com and check out this and all of our other back episodes. Pop on over to YouTube and check out all of our premium online content, videos, movie reviews, board game reviews, and all that good stuff. And shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And in parting, in the immortal words of Dorothy,
there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Oh man, that sounded like bad porno footage.
That was good.